Blog Talk Radio.
That's interesting. Gabe, can you hear me?
I'm right here.
The intro didn't go on.
Welcome.
Hang on. It's funny. Hi, Gabe.
Hi.
I must have a computer delay or something going on with my router or whatever. Anyway, hi, everybody. It's Elizabeth and Gabe Berman. We're here today on the Best Ever You show, and Gabe's basically going to, like, co-host slash be my guest today for the next hour. And so, Gabe, should I see if the intro will play just because it's fun? Let's see. We'll give it
sure.
One more whirl. Hold on. Here we go.
Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network. The Best Ever You Show is here to help you live your life to the fullest. How? Real people, including celebrities, real advice, real places, products and businesses, real life stories. With this radio show, printed magazine, websites, community, and more. And now, here is your host, Elizabeth.
Okay, we're just keeping it real, right, Gabe?
Even if this is your 200th show around, we'll just pretend it's your first because of the technical difficulties. It'll just going to go so well that it's like, oh, my God, their first show was so great.
Exactly. All right. You know, we're here today to basically say the word bullshit. So here we go. Bleep. No, you've written this cool book called The Complete Bullshit-Free and Totally Tested Writing Guide, How to Make Publishers, Agents, Editors, and readers fall in love with your work. And we're speaking with Gabe Berman. Gabe Berman is the author of Live Like a Fruit Fly, which is one of my favorite books. And Gabe's one of my inspirations and just a great guy. So hi, Gabe.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Where are you calling me from? Are you in New York?
I am in New York in my sister's house, standing looking at the dog sleep.
Yeah, the dog is cute, by the way. Is it the Golden Retriever?
It is the Golden Retriever.
I love that dog. And I love the way that dog eats Fruit Loops.
He'll eat anything, not just Fruit Loops.
I love that dog. That dog is so cute. What's the name of the dog?
His name is Tiva.
What
is
it?
Which is a girl's name, kind of. It's Tiva.
Uh-huh.
T-E-V-A, and he just looked at me as I said his name.
I grew up with my parents. My parents always had Golden Retrievers, and every once in a while they would have a litter of Golden Retrievers. And, you know, give them to neighbors or friends or people or whatever. But I've grown up with Golden Retrievers my whole life. They are the coolest dogs. Except
cool.
If you ever get, like, actually burglarized or anything, I swear to God, the dog would lick the burglar to death.
That's funny.
I don't think, or maybe just lift its head up like it just did. Like, really? They're funny. So, anyway. All right, tell me about this book, because this is a cool book. Why did you write this book? First of all,
the idea actually just popped into my head one day when someone sent me an email and saying, like, hey, can you check this out and tell me if you think it's any good and should I can keep on writing to maybe publish it. And it was a very cool idea, but within the first two sentences, I was completely gone and lost it. I had no interest in it anymore because I feel like many people write, or they call themselves writers, which is great because people should, you know, add some beauty to the world. But they don't realize what it takes to get somebody engaged in what they write. And I've always said that, not that I'm the greatest writer in the world, but I can write 1,000 words about toilet paper, and by the end, the reader will think that they're my best friend and I'm their best friend. So I was thinking that maybe there are so many writing books out there, and of course there are billions of college courses about writing, but they never really teach you to write from the gut. They teach you the rules of writing. So that's why I put this out, because I know it will definitely help people quickly to write more proficiently and to get people interested. And even if it's not publishers or editors or agents, it'll definitely be readers. And with all the self-publishing now, that's all that matters, just to get somebody engaged.
You know, being your friend for a few years now, I don't know how many years we've been friends now, probably two, maybe creeping up on,
sounds good.
I don't know, probably, yeah, two, let's go two.
A lifetime.
It seems to me like you have a knack for knowing, like, what's a good book and what's not a good book, sort of, like what would actually sell and maybe what wouldn't, what's just maybe a fun hobby Do you feel that way too?
You know, I don't know if I know what would sell or not sell, but I definitely know what people will sink their teeth into. And thankfully, I'm so grateful. Just about every review on my Live Like a Fruit Fly book is, oh my God, I read this in one sitting and I couldn't even go to work because I had to stay home to just make sure that I finished this.
Yeah.
And that's what you want to hear. You know, I don't feel like people want to be blown away by how descriptive you can write or how many long words you can use. I don't know any of that. And I don't even know the rules of writing. I just know how to grab somebody by their hearts or by their throats to make sure they read what you have to say. And although I write about myself just about 99% of the time, the only reason I do is to relate to the reader. I feel that many people are writing about themselves, and you know, unless you're a celebrity, I don't even care. And even if you are a celebrity, it's like I feel sorry for you, or I'm happy for you, and I think you have a great story about outer space or whatever. But you're writing to make yourself smile, which is great, but you have to worry about who's on the other side. And that's why I wrote this book. And I really think that, well, I don't even think, I just know from the reviews from it so far that even writers who have been writing so long have like, okay, I have to throw everything out and start over because I have to remember that there is somebody on the other side of this who needs to click into it. Because if you are writing and thinking about getting published on, you know, the way is you have to think about the reader. It's the only way. And you can say, oh, I don't care about the fans. I don't care about anything else. Like, okay, congratulations, because you'll never get published.
Well, you know, and this might be a really cool conversation for us to have, because you and I are both published authors at this point. With yours,
right.
You Live Like a Fruit Fly was signed with
HCI.
HCI.
Right.
And then my book is coming out through Hay House in August or September or around there. And I so totally agree with you that you have to find it. It's kind of like you have to find your voice, but not make it about, you know, pleasing you. You really have to, like, it's a clever combination of finding your voice and, like, talking to whoever's reading, like you're sitting down and having a conversation with somebody in the room almost.
Exactly. And thankfully, that's the review that I always get. Like, I wrote a book about writing just now, and half the people, I'm sure, who read it, they couldn't care less about writing, but it's like they're having a conversation with someone who cares about them, and that's what the book should be about.
Well, you know what I really particularly love about this is you've captured the 11-year-old market perfectly.
Right, exactly. Any book that can say bullshit.
Bullshit. Right. my 11-year-old came in my office and he's like, picked up the book and he's like, this says bullshit on it. And I'm like, yes, it does, Quaid. Yes, it does. And he's like, can I read this? And I'm like, you may, actually, because while it may say that on the cover, the content is, you know, the content does not say bullshit throughout it. It's, you know, it's Gabe. And I said, you've read Gabe's books. You've read Live Like a Fruit Fly. He goes, yeah, I couldn't put it down. That was such a good book. And I said, well, spend an hour and go read this one. And he came back and he's like, you should totally have him on your radio show again. That's a really good book, Mom.
So and I sent your kid. I sent your kid $20 right after that conversation. I was going after the 9-year-old to 11-year-old market because my nephews, their twin boys, were 9 years old. They always, when I was writing it, they would always ask me, "So, how's that bullshit book going?" And like, they just thought they were getting away with murder by saying it over and over and over again. And,
oh, yeah.
And then when I actually got the book in my hand and I showed it to them, I just, because I'm an 11-year-old, I made them read it over to me over and over and over again, just that we all thought it was funny. Except,
yeah.
You know, their parents didn't think it was so funny, but such is life.
Yeah, no. Well, my son was like, Mom, what do you get when you cross a bulldog with a shih tzu? A bullshit, you know, just like, oh, God.
Yeah.
You know, just every bullshit joke came out. So anyway, we're going to mark this conversation mature just because we're swearing. So kids, if you're listening, you know, be cool with us. But tell me more about the book for real. Seriously, what are you trying to do here in helping people write for real? Be serious for a second. Just
be serious?
I know it's hard.
What am I trying to do? Well, I'm not trying to really change a system. I'm just trying to get people to understand that they need to play by a sort of different set of rules to be a part of things that are red. And I remember when I was first really getting into writing, first of all, I'd always complain about wanting to be a writer, but I would never write because why should I write if I'm never going to get published? One day I finally said, okay, that's ridiculous. I'm just going to start. And 2 years later, I bumped into somebody who was writing for the Miami Herald, and I sent them some of my work, and a week later, I was writing for the Miami Herald because they just liked the way I wrote. But the thing is, people would constantly tell me, it's like, you can't write like this because you are only writing to as if one person would read this. Like, you're writing like a secret journal entry to one person, and there's no way that anyone can ever read that. And thankfully, they turned out to be wrong, because the Miami Herald said when they first read my column for them, my test column, was like, it seems like you have this grip of something without having a grip on anything. Like, you've sent us a letter, but the letter can go into the Miami Herald for the, you know, 50,000 people or 100,000 people to read it, and that's the style that actually we didn't know we were looking for, but that is exactly what we want. And right. All I was doing was pretending that I was writing to a best friend of mine. And I knew that if I would make him laugh or make him get into it or make him feel something for it, then anybody would, because, you know, I just know that he knows what's good. And then from there, I started actually saying that now that I know what's good, I'm just going to write to myself. And if I can prove it to myself that I've done my best work, then everyone out there would like it, or most people. So I just feel like if you go into the bookstore, which I spend a lot of time in, that there is so much crap on the shelves, and miraculously they get published, and a lot of crap sells, which is,
why?
You know, God bless them.
It's so frustrating and confusing, well, too. It's like, you know, I get some books, like, you know, I get books to review a lot, and no offense to anybody or anything like that. You know, some of them I just, you know, the whole house will go through them and we'll be like, yes, no, no way. This one's kind of cool kind of thing. And some of them are actually just, this is my opinion, but just not even, I don't think, marketable. But they're hardbound and they're published.
It's just proof that the gatekeepers to the industry, publishers and editors and definitely literary agents, they don't know what's best. I mean, sometimes they do, and I just found that normally they don't. And thank God for self-publishing and being able to publish a book on CreateSpace and be publishing a book on Kindle, because you've completely cut out the middleman. But now, of course, it all comes down to marketing. And I don't even know if I've ever told you this or ever told anybody, there were that many people. Live Like a Fruit Fly, before it came out, was self-published.
Yeah.
And I wrote 400 columns for 8 years for the Miami Herald, and now I felt like, oh, they're just going to want to look at me and publish anything that I write. So I wrote this self-help book, Live Like a Fruit Fly, from a very different angle. I got endorsed by Deepak Chopra by some other miracle. And publishers just wouldn't even listen to what I had to say. They wouldn't even read my letters. I wouldn't even get the rejected form letters. So I just self-published it after a couple of years of trying to make it happen, because I knew that this book needed to be out there. And First of all, it's just a side note. You have to feel that about your book. If you're not so in love with your book, if you don't know that, like, someone needs to read this, just throw it out and start over. Because it has to be like a life or death feeling. And I had it. So I wasn't going to let anyone stop me, which goes along with the Live Like a Fruit Fly theme. So I self-published it, and then because of a whole other string of events and the butterfly effect, a publisher actually just heard of it through a third person, and then within a week of them finding it, they put it out there.
Good.
So is there a moral of the story? I really don't. The moral of the story is that you have to write like your life depends on it. And then it's the most important thing. And then once you have something like that, you have to make sure it gets out there. So it's either self-publishing or finding a publisher, like whatever you have to do to make it happen. But it's not even just about writing. Like an artist can read my book, or a sculptor or a painter or a metal worker or a musician can read my book, or just somebody who likes to work on cars, if that's their art. Like, anything can be artistic, but a lot of my new writing book, and I'll also Live Like a Fruit Fly, is just like, get off your butt and make it happen, because you just never know. And if you don't get off your butt, like, even the most horrible writer has a chance of getting published over somebody who's like Hemingway, who never picks up a pen.
You know,
I've officially answered none of your questions so far.
No, I think you did. I think you did, and you created some additional comments too, because I just couldn't agree with you more that, you know, number one, you don't ever give up, and that can be a really intense process of really truly never giving up. If you really want to publish that poem or book you've written or whatever, and you've got a stack of 150 rejection letters in front of you or none because you're not even getting that, then definitely self-publish or self-publish anyway. And
right.
Market it and get enough of them sold that you grab somebody's attention. I think what number was that? Is it 2,500 or 15,000? I can't remember. There's like a magic number of self-published books that can get sold before you get picked up.
I don't subscribe to that whatsoever because I don't subscribe to that number whatsoever because I was nowhere near that mark when Live Like a Fruit Fly got a contract. Nowhere near.
Yeah.
It's just... You know, and that magic number is written by someone who's like a gatekeeper to the industry. And
that's funny.
The ego of people in the book publishing industry, and also, you know, obviously in any industry, but they just feel that, yeah, anything creative, the people that are the gatekeepers might not be the most creative people on the planet, kind of like a movie critic. And they might put their foot down and tell you the numbers and this, but they're just dying on the inside to write from the gut. And no one really knows what it's like to write from the gut until you do it. It's a completely different feeling.
Yeah, and I have a children's book out there that's self-published called Pinky Doodlebug, and that's just been a labor of love. And I have had so many rejection letters on that book, Gabe. I can't even begin to tell you how many. Oh, it's got a rhyme mishap in it. Oh, it doesn't follow the standard children's book theme of having three problems and then the problem gets solved, you know, like Goldie Blocks and the Three Bears. You know, children's books, I guess, notoriously have to have three problems and then something gets solved. And
yeah, like,
I'm
who,
just like,
who
really?
Who cares about a formula? Like, a formula? Are you
for
kidding?
For children's books?
Do you think, like, The Matrix followed a formula before that came out or any phenomenal movie? It's like... What the books that end up being phenomenal are the books that have broken the formula.
Yeah.
The formula, and that when I used to write for the Herald, I used to write the nightlife column, and I used to, you know, if I was out listening to a band or writing about a restaurant, they'd be like, oh, so how long have you been to journalism school? And I said, you know, thank God I didn't go to journalism school because there's no way I'd be writing for the Herald right now because maybe I'd be able to write for the real estate section, but how boring is that? I never wanted to be taught how to write.
I did go to journalism school and broadcasting school, and let me tell you, to this day, I still don't know where commas go, semicolons, and I write dot, 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 and hyphens, and I write
That's
like
why
I first liked your writing when we first started talking,
because I read your work, and I was like, wow, she actually is speaking to me, but through the written word.
And
not...
smiley faces. Instead of putting periods
right.
and smiley faces on everything, it's like, you know what, I just refuse. And that's just the way it goes. And I think we need that because, you know, the kids, like I've got a child right now in, he's actually out of English class now because he was just being smothered in this class. He's in middle school. And he was coming home and basically almost in tears because my child has like a love, you know, love of writing. He's got some stuff published on Lulu and all this stuff. And I taught him, bad me, to just write and not punctuate anything. And so he's getting all cut. This teacher's catching him all up in the punctuation. And it's just killed his love of writing. He's like, I'm not doing this. Yeah. And, but so we've got him kind of doing some different things in school to kind of learn but still keep his love of writing now. But isn't that funny how you can get all caught up in that and then just kind of feel like you want to give in, even at a young age?
I always knew that I wanted to be a writer. When I was a little kid, I was just walking through the public library, and I don't even know how young I was, but I was. I was definitely just a kid. And I needed to find a book for school, and I just was walking through the mystery section as I walked out. And I don't even like mysteries. It's not something that I'm into. But I just saw this guy's book, so I grabbed it, and it was like the most serendipitous, cosmic, universal, metaphysical event of my entire life because I opened the first page, and the lead character was kind of like speaking to the camera, which was so cool, like in a Ferris Bueller-y kind of way.
Yeah.
And then he said one sentence, and then the next page was everything that he was thinking in parentheses, the character. And I'm like, this is what I want to do. I want to be a writer. Like, this is cool. And then when I got to college and taking writing classes, not like journalism major, like creative writing things, if I could squeak them in, they crushed me because I wasn't following their rules. I'm like, maybe this isn't what I want to do because it just completely sucks. Like, I'm listening to the teacher who is obviously not creative. They're just teaching, which is cool that they got the gig, but this is not helping me flow. And obviously you need to know how to spell the word grammar eventually. But, you know, do you need to?
I'm not positive on that.
You know, my mom used to yell at me all the time, being like, oh, how are you going to be a writer if you're like, well, I have an editor one day. And then all my editors became my enemies, but that's a complete other story. So I, you know, get the college.
Mine are a little frustrated with me right now, too.
Right. And they completely crush you. And you definitely need to know the rules, but writing is something that you need a flow to. It's kind of like, if I think of Michael Jordan playing basketball, did he like follow the exact rules of like how to make a play, or he just basically flew? He just defied gravity and he defied logic and he defied the laws of basketball. And I feel like it comes the same thing with writing, but it comes the same thing with anything. If you're an accountant or a lawyer or a doctor, you have to just come from your heart, not even like spiritually speaking or being kind. I'm talking about like, you need to come from your heart and you need to come from your gut. And that's what I talk about a lot in both of my books, especially the writing book.
And I think you have to do it for you in a way also. And what I mean by that is whether or not you're a smashing success and have sold, you know, gazillions of books, or, you know, you're out there on Lulu.com and you've sold 25. The point of it all, though, is that either way you've succeeded. Because you've come from your heart, you've written something, you've done something, and that's a lot. That's a step more than some people who just stop and don't do it, or say they're going to write and never do, or quit and do something else, or don't follow their dreams, their passions, their goals. You know, that whole stumbling block.
But there's definitely a line, though, when someone who's published and understands writing tells you that, you know what, this kind of sucks and you need to reform this. And if they say, no, I'm just going to follow my gut, like, okay, good, go follow your gut, I understand. But obviously you need to take advice from people who are in the know. Like I always say to my friend that you can't, here's another Matrix reference, because as you know from Live Like a Fruit Fly, all I do is make movie references, but you can't take advice from living outside of the Matrix from people who are so stuck in the Matrix. Like, I wouldn't take advice from someone who knows how to teach punctuation and sentence structure. I wouldn't take advice from them for how should I connect with the reader. But for someone like you who's being published by Hay House, you know what's going on, so I would listen to what you have to say.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Like, there's definitely a line.
Yeah. I have the coolest editors. They are so cool, and I've got to tell you, I have taken every single one of their suggestions. I have not argued at all on anything. They have made the book. It's gone through three revisions, actually three restructurings is what I'd call it. They're like, the writing's fine. It's just the actual structure and flow. And so we've restructured it. This is going to be the third time. And
I'm sorry, I'm going to say that I have the coolest editor. I'm sorry. I'm going to put my editor
we can fight over
yours.
They're cool.
And they can fight to the death.
They're wise. It's a different kind of wisdom. And I think sometimes books take a couple sets of eyes. You know, even like my mom's read it, my husband's read it, my kids have read it, editors have read it. I love different people's feedback on something I'm writing. Not that I'm going to take every single suggestion, but sometimes different sets of eyes do cool things with books, and they catch things that you can't see when you're in the trench.
I completely agree with you. And sometimes, even if you don't change what you're doing, last night I'm writing a new book, or I'm actually writing four or five of them at the same time right now, and who knows if I'll ever get done with any of them. But I showed a new chapter to my sister last night, and she said, oh, you should write right here about this. And I wasn't, you know, it's a decent suggestion, but she gave me a complete great idea for the next chapter or two after.
Yeah.
So you never know. I mean, you show people that you trust and go from there.
Yeah. Okay, I have a question for you in your book. We're going to go back to your book. And for those of you who have just joined us, which I can see a few of you have, hello. And we're speaking with Gabe Berman for the hour. And he has a new book out called The Complete Bullshit Free and Totally Tested Writing Guide. Now I just like to say bullshit. How to Make Publishers, Agents, Editors, and Readers Fall in Love with Your Work. And Gabe Berman is the author of Live Like a Fruit Fly. And he's also got The Fruit Fly Strikes Back. And I don't know if that's a book yet or it's still on the...
Not yet.
Not yet, but we'll...
It's getting closer. The sequel
we'll get there.
Closer.
Yeah, we're going to get there. We're going to talk about this one, then we're going to come back to Fruit Fly Strikes Back, because that's so cute. But in here, you say, memorize these words and live by them. It hurts my feelings, Gabe. No one gives a shit about you. Ouch.
It's true. When you're writing a book, you have to remember those magic words that no one gives a shit about you. Of course, they don't want you to die, and they want the best for you to live a happy, prosperous life. But when you're writing, if you don't remember those words, and I still go back to them all the time. Like, I find myself just talking about my day or talking about some story. Like, I'm trying to get to a point, but I'll throw in a couple of sentences. I'm like, no one gives a shit about this. Like, why would anyone care about this? And I feel that that's what happens in so many books, that they just start showing off, or they start talking about, oh, and my mom in the hospital. You know, I'm sad your mom's in the hospital, but honestly, I have things to do. And if you're expecting me to trade my time to read your words, just sit here and read, then it has to be something that I give a shit about. It's not even about your mom or the toilet paper or the Spanish-American War or anything. You have to write it in a way that pulls me in, that I want to read it. And then once you do, I'm in. Like, I will love everything you do. I'll buy every single of your books. I mean, I'll buy your book before I even buy food, just because that's how you've hooked me up. But I would say 90% of the writers out there don't realize that no one gives a shit about them personally. It's like, if we're going to read your words, give me a reason to.
Yeah, it's almost ego. It's a trippy thing, and I see that sometimes in people's writing, and I've even fixed it in my own, and I've had to stop and go, why would anybody, I turn it around, like, who's this actually going to help, or how's this going to make somebody better, or, you know, do I give a shit about this and nobody else does? You know, I kind of put the Gabe check on it sometimes. I'm like, you know, would Gabe give a shit about this? That's what I'm saying. It's just money. You know, that could be your idea. Does Gabe give a shit? Does Gabe?
And you should answer right away. Probably not.
Probably not. So, what makes people? What is it that you can write in a book? Let's help people a little bit here, because that might make people feel bad and really lost and confused to be hitting people over the head with that. What really makes people get hooked or care or want to come give you a hug and meet you in person because your mother's, you know, sick or whatever. What do you write then?
You completely have to put yourself in the reader's shoes, and you have to see, this is tough. This is the part where you have to just feel your way through that, and you have to write from the heart. And it seems like that's such a statement that can just throw out there, oh, just do it from your heart. But you have to have such a good, like Ernest Hemingway says, every writer needs a good bullshit detector. And that is the only way. You have to kind of like pass your own test. You have to say to yourself, if I was reading this, if somebody else, some random person out in the world, would I care? Would I give a shit? You have to be so hypercritical of what you're doing just to make sure that, unless you don't care what anybody else reads, then you can write a 15,000-page story about horses who speak Hebrew in the middle of a shopping mall. Which
and
actually,
publish it yourself and have a great time.
Yeah, and, you know, but even if you do write a book like that, there is a way to connect with people that you have to dig down and find. And to say, like, oh, do it this way, then I automatically sound like somebody who's giving you rules on how to write. If you're a writer, you will find a way in your gut to have that gut check to know that you're not just pontificating about nonsense. Maybe it's me, but I can't even read a book that if you walk, let's say there's something happening in a hospital room somewhere, and you tell me in 3 pages about what the curtains look like and how the sun's coming through the room and the vibe in the room. It's like, I don't even want to know. Like, just tell me how everything is feeling at that moment, and then allow me to create my own what the hospital room looks like. You want to throw in about how the sunlight is bouncing off the patient's face and the doctor has a goatee, and cool, add some description, I get it, but I personally have no patience for all of that description. I have no patience for showing off, like, congratulations, you're a better writer than I am. Like, I don't care. It just hooks me in. And it's like that with any subject, and it's like that with any art. But
I'm laughing at your book right now. Sorry.
What part?
I've turned to chapter 6, and it says, I hate surfers. Okay. You and I are both a little random sometimes in our writing. Like, I noticed we kind of have some similar writing styles, but it's like, I hate surfers. That's the start of chapter 6, folks. I hate surfers.
See, but that's another thing, which would cover it either before or after that, I don't know. Like, your first sentence or your first paragraphs, they have to be so hardcore and so awesome and so engaging, because it's kind of like that first impression thing. It's how many times do you have to make a first impression? Just once, therefore it's called a first impression. And I feel like I need to be hit over the head right away. And it's in the middle of the book. It's chapter 6, and it's like, I hate surfers, but that's not, it's only 3 words. But it's in the middle of a writing book, and there's nobody on the planet who can read I Hate Surfers if they're already in the book and not go to the next sentence. So, I mean, you want me to just read a little bit of this right now?
Yeah, I do, and I'm curious why you wrote it that way, and let's give people a little bit of a writing lesson, because this is kind of something I've also learned from you. It's one of my favorite ways to write.
Just being completely random? Okay, well, because here's another reason. It's like, it's so out in left field that if you read any kind of writing book, it's always just so straight to the point and basic. And that's what we all want. We want tips on how to write, but you still have to make somebody read your book. It's like if you can have 2 textbooks that are next to each other, one could be written in a way that you will understand and get to the point of the information that it's trying to teach you, and the other will be telling the same exact information. Like, let's say it's a science book. The science isn't different, but there's just 2 different ways of telling it. And people need, as writers and artists and people out in the world, need to find a way how to connect with the other side. So the surfers chapter is, it just starts off with, I hate surfers. They have perfectly defined bodies, and I bet they never step foot in a gym or think twice about what they eat. So now you're in a reading book, and you're talking about surfing. You're like, what the hell is going on here? And then I say, all right, I don't hate them. Maybe I'm just jealous. Okay, you got me. I'm totally jealous. A little bit about me now, because it's not like the reader is going to be like, I don't care about you, Gabe. It's because you know that you look at other people with perfect body, and you're like, God damn it, how did they do that? It's driving me nuts. Like, were they born that way, and that's why they're thin, and it doesn't matter what they eat? Or do they go out work out all goddamn day, and why am I sitting here with, like, you know, trying to suck on my stomach all the day so I don't look fat? It's like everyone will connect to that. And
I just wear black.
Talking about writing. What's that?
I just dress in black. It's thinning.
Yeah, I'm talking about writing, but yet I'm connecting to how everyone feels. Like, oh, God, how is that person so thin and in such sick shape? Like, it's driving me nuts. Anyway, so I said, okay, you got me. I'm totally jealous. But what came first, the chicken or the egg? Are these bastards driven to surf because they're born with Adonis attributes, or do they get so goddamn good-looking from surfing? In other words, if I took up surfing, would I also end up looking like I'm ready for a men's fitness shoot? So here we are talking about something that has nothing to do with writing, but everyone can understand what's happening and relate to it, and now I can go to writing. I bring this up because I used the word sycophants in the last chapter, and trust me, my vocabulary isn't that good. I heard that word in a Seal song many moons ago, and I eventually got around to looking it up. And sycophant means ass kisser. So am I a writer because I was born with a proclivity to make note of everything, or does my brain behave this way because I write? Which one is it? I'm not sure. Probably both. Since we can't know exactly, there's only one thing to do, write.
Right.
So, because people have so many questions about, how should I start? What do you think I should do about this? Do you think I should start with an outline?
Write
down my thoughts? And then everyone says, like, oh, are you right? I want to be a writer. And then my question is, okay, have you started yet? And they always get pissed off. It's like, what do you expect, man? You have to start.
Yeah. That's the number one thing. People are like, my inbox sometimes gets flooded with, I want to be a writer. How do you be a writer? And I'm like, oh, man, hang on, I'm writing. I got to get back to your email in a little while. That's a really tough question to answer, because it's like, I don't know, you just write. And I think practice, you know, it's like if you want to be a baseball player but never swing a bat, I don't know what to tell
right,
you.
Exactly.
Want to be a football player and don't throw football around. You got to practice.
And I talk about this in the sequel to Living Like a Fruit Fly, that not everyone who pursues their passions will make it. It's obvious, because you're like some scrawny little, you know, half-blind boy. You're not going to make the New York Yankees. It's just not going to happen. But if you really feel passionate about trying out for the Yankees, go try out for them. Like, if you stop, you're an idiot, because this is what you feel in your gut. Your gut is telling you, that no matter what anyone says, I need to go play baseball and I need to go try out for the Yankees. It's what I'm going to do. So then this scrawny little kid shows up at the Yankees and everyone laughs at him and he can't hit a ball, he can't catch or whatever. But he just says something to some other guy in the locker room who says something, and he gets an idea that, you know what, maybe I'll go to med school because of what this guy said to me. But I never thought of it before, but now this guy said it to me. He said the magic words, and I'm going to be like a pediatric oncologist, and I'm going to figure out how to help kids with cancer. And that never would have happened in a billion years unless he followed his gut. The butterfly effect took control. The universe was like all moving to one place. He just had to get to the Yankee tryout for some guy to be like, hey, why don't you go to med school? And he probably never would have occurred to him. Maybe it was somebody he trusted. That might sound ridiculous, but if you look back at your life, that's how everything cool has ever happened. That is exactly that way. It's one thing led to another, led to another, led to another. I always wanted to be a writer. What's that?
You were just somewhere and a different connection happened. Or it just goes off, but I agree with you totally. You have to follow it through.
When I was writing for years, just trying to get published and getting rejected, and just writing and building up this whole portfolio of complete nonsense. I was just writing about my life and about ex-girlfriends and jobs that I've been fired from, just like this big funny thing. And then I was having breakfast at this place, and I talk about this and Live Like a Fruit Fly. And this girl is looking at me, and I knew, not because she wanted me, but because I looked familiar to her. We went to school together, went to University of Miami, and I just was in no mood to talk to anybody. It's just like I didn't even want to be at that breakfast place, but I was supposed to meet a friend who didn't show up, so I just went anyway. I just knew that I had to go, but I didn't want to go. So there I was. This girl's looking at me. I'm like, I'm just going to keep my head down. There's no way that I'm going to speak to her. I'm just not in the mood. So she comes up to me and like, oh, God, I guess I have to speak to her. And she's saying, oh, I've been writing for a long time. And I'm like, great, I'm a writer too. And she said, hey, why don't you just send me something? And I said, okay, you're not going to like it, but I'll just send it. So I didn't know who this girl was. I had no clue. I mean, I knew who she was from college, but I didn't know that she was like a famous published author writing for many different journals and magazines and newspapers. And I finally said, you know what, I'll just send her something. And because of that, a week later, the Miami Herald called me and said, we just want you. That's it. Like, you're hired. Just do a couple of things for us, but go through the motions. But you are hired. And just imagine, you know, if I didn't go to, it's like all being at that one place. But that connection beat all the schooling. It beat all of the writing. It beat all of the practicing. It's like, if it wasn't just for that moment. So you got to just, you know, follow your gut and get to where you need to be.
That's kind of like this radio show. It really is. It's like the first time I did a radio show, I swear to God, I'm sitting there going, this is stupid. I am talking to air. There's nobody listening. Literally
probably like right now,
because
I'm on the air. It's just me and you. But, sorry about that.
You're funny. But do you know what I mean? Where you just try something even, and even if you suck at it so bad, but you've done it,
yep.
It opens the door, no matter what. It's so buzz.
And you can't rely on people in your family or your best friends to
buy your book,
to
read it.
Forget about buying your book. To support you in something different. Like everyone, back to the Matrix, everyone wants you to stay in the Matrix. They don't want you to bust out, because then it'll kind of make them look silly for having a stupid job that they hate. Like no one really wants you to be your own kind of person out there. And I wrote about that in the book, but do you mind? I just want to finish that one thing about the circuit thing, and then I want to talk about the friends and family. Is that cool?
Yeah, and then and then page 46 we're going to do in, after that. I'll check on time here. Hang on. Oh, we're good on time. We've got 20 minutes, so keep going.
All right. So back to that writing thing about which one is it? Like, do I pay attention to everything because I'm a writer, or is I born that way and we don't know? So the only answer is to just start writing and see what happens. And then I say, if you don't already pay attention to everything, start this moment. Scroll away everything in your mind, and you'll be amazed at what you can recall when a sentence calls for it. There are legions of writers who popped out of their moms way more talented than me, but I made it because I made myself make it. I didn't take no for an answer. When doors wouldn't open in the traditional manner, I kicked through them with brute force. Mm-hmm. And I assure you, since you brought yourself to these words, you have a desire, a capital letter D, desire. Mm-hmm. And the desire will bring you further than the most gifted writer who never picks up the pen. In other words, you may never see me in men's fitness, but eventually, if I had the desire, my boards would be waxed up and I'd be surfing. And then I throw these two quotes out at the end. I'll just give you the one quote. It's by a writer named Eric Hoffer, and he says, "We are told that talent creates its own opportunities, but it sometimes seems that intense desire creates not only its opportunities, but its own talents," which is kind of like backwards thinking, but it's pretty brilliant, and it's completely true. There's something, not to sound too hokey here, but there's something about the universe that kind of cooperates with you to get to where you need to be.
Yeah. I completely agree with that, and it's passion and desire and all those things. I was saying this to my son the other day. You know, he said, "God, you know, no matter what, I am just not hitting this season." And I'm like, "Con, his name's Connor." I'm like, "Con, we're like one game in here, buddy," you know, kind of thing. And you haven't played really all winter long except inside. So let's cut ourselves some slack and just understand that if you want to be a really, really good hitter, you might have to work a little bit harder at it. But if that's what you want, you got to do the work. You got to put in the time. You have to pay attention to what they're telling you. You've got to be there, show up, be present, you know, be alert, be, you know, and try and go for it and do, you know, all that coaching, sports psychology stuff. And,
right. And it's also what you said is showing up. That's so important because it's like showing up is like 99% of the battle. Like,
oh,
just
yeah.
Get there. And let, like, have your best intention out there and let the universe take over.
Yeah,
kind of,
yeah,
like the
is...
perfect...
Oh, go ahead. Sorry. Well,
no, there's a balance between, like, surrendering and effort. And once you find that little balance, things work out a lot better.
Yeah. Well, and this is my kiddo, and he hates when I talk about him on the radio, but I'm doing it anyway. But he got cut from the baseball team as a freshman. And, you know, what are you going to do? And, there was no freshman team. It was just JV and varsity, and there were kids better than him. So what did he do? He worked his rear end off all winter long, came back as a sophomore, and played a junior year and a senior year. But this year he's like, "I have to hit a home run. This is my thing. I have to hit," you know, kind of thing. You know, he's just the little things we do to ourselves to put pressure on ourselves kind of thing. I'm like, "Whatever, Connor. Listen to how to hit a home. Keep trying. Do all your things." Anyway, yesterday he had a game, and the ball came within like an inch of the fence. Oh. Is that funny, though? I mean, it went flying, though, Gabe. The longest hit that he's ever had in his entire, you know, baseball gig, it went flying. And he's like, "Okay, I'm good now." You know? It's just...
I just completely understand.
Yeah, but that's kind of like... It's kind of like writing and publishing things and, you know, doing all these creative things and things that are outside the box, dancing, basketball, baseball, writing, all
right.
These things that aren't traditional. They're different than going to school to be a doctor.
Right, which is great. We definitely need doctors and we definitely need people going to school, but we also need artists. And that brings me to this little thing that I wanted to read you from my book, if it's okay.
Yep.
The chapter starts out with, "Forget about your friends and family. Not altogether, of course, but you can forget about getting them on board. They just don't want you to try to become a writer. The sooner you surrender to this, the sooner that you'll be free of their expectations. I'm sure they usually offer reliable advice, but here, actually I said it right here in my book, but you can't trust words of wisdom about living outside of the matrix from people who are thoroughly stuck inside of it. What they don't understand is that you're not trying to become a writer, because the thing is, we already are writers. What we're trying to do is make it in the world as we are. How will you keep up with the Joneses, they always want to know. Maybe we won't, but from my perspective, we've already eclipsed the Joneses because, unlike most others, we have the guts to follow our hearts." So, where did that go? I just completely lost my page. This is really wonderful. Would you take two?
You were on.
Well, hold on a second. What happened? It's like my entire book just fell out of my hands and it's gone.
That's okay. But I get, I'll save you here for
okay,
a second.
Okay, here it is. Okay.
I agree. Yeah, keep going. All right. You're good.
All right. So maybe we won't, but from my perspective, we've already eclipsed the Joneses because, unlike most others, we have the guts to follow our hearts. And then it just simply ends with, so what should we do with all the rejection letters from agents and publishers and loved ones? You keep writing and you keep writing and pay attention to how the universe unfolds.
Yeah, I agree. Let's have everybody who's listening maybe grab a pen and a piece of paper and do the exercise. Gabe, can you lead them through page 46?
Sure.
Have them write down these words? Because this is really, really important. So everybody listening, we'll give you a second here. Grab a piece of paper because Gabe has some really great wisdom here.
After I got my book published, everyone said, oh, my God, how'd you make this happen? Hey, because I know that I'm not the best writer in the world. You know, I'm definitely not Salinger or Kurt Vonnegut or anybody, but I do what I do well. So they just wanted to know how I pulled off this miracle. So I go through this exercise basically with everybody, and this is the list that I came up with, stuff that you need to get published. Ready?
Okay, here we go. Everybody writing?
College-level grammar, postgraduate sentence structure, a completed outline.
Okay, go slower. So people can write them down. Hang on.
Sorry.
So college-level grammar, postgraduate sentence structure. Yep.
A completed outline.
Okay.
Constructed ending. And this is what I do. I tell everyone this exact thing. You need character bios, a central hypothesis.
What's that?
And then go get a whole list of literary agents. And then a whole list of publishers. And the book costs like $35 in the bookstore of like the list of agents. Then you need marketing content. And this is the biggest one, which everyone always tells you to have. Make sure you have a writing platform. Get all your social media involved. Like, that's what everyone says. Get your platform and get your media plan. Like, that's the biggest thing that people want you to know. Like, social media, Twitter, free. Like, just make sure you have that down. Like, build the biggest
platform
social media
ever.
Campaign you can write. So build. Now, what you need to do is read the list over when you can. And then the most important part, or the second most important part, is you have to fold this in half and put it in a very special place. And then go back to that, take the piece of paper, look at it, and then throw the goddamn list out. Because this is what everyone tells you to do, and this is all the motions that people want you to go through and all the hoops that you have to go through
to get published.
But the whole purpose of that exercise is it keeps you from doing the one thing that's ever going to get you published, and that is to write. So that's a list that I tell people to really go to, and I kind of like bring them out into left field, and then I just trash it and tell them to throw it away. Because none of that matters. None of that matters if you're not getting out there and writing the best work that you can write.
Okay, I'm going to add one to this. I think a lot of people spend their times in this mode too, and that's writing book proposals.
Oh, I know. Like, that's so happy you brought that up. And, you know, I noticed the industry, and the industry works that way. Oh, send me a book proposal. What do you mean, send you a
book
proposal?
What is a book proposal?
Like, there are books written by people who write book proposals, but they've never come out with a book. Like, okay, you have a book about book proposals, but you don't even know how to write? Are you kidding me? But I was a victim to that. I read those books because I didn't know what the hell was going on. I was just trying to get published.
Yep.
But it all comes down to writing. You have to first write the best thing that you can possibly write, and then let all that other nonsense fall in line.
You know what I said to somebody once? Somebody asked me to send them my book proposal. And they said, well, mm-hmm. I don't know what that is exactly, but I've got the book.
Right.
I'm like, a book proposal? I've written the book. Why would I send you a book proposal? Well, here's the book. Just read the book. You don't know whether you like it or not. I don't know what to tell you. A book proposal.
And there's definitely a place for that.
I'm sure there is.
You definitely need to be able to have your elevator pitch. But people get so caught up in that their book proposal is perfect, but their book sucks. Maybe that's why the bookstore is filled with such crap, because people only read the book proposal and they don't care that much about the book.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how to answer that. But I couldn't agree with you more, is like college-level grammar. Like, you know, if you put incredible words in your book, I so hope it's like a medical book or something along those lines, because big worded books. I don't know. My vocabulary isn't that hot.
Yeah, and I'm happy you brought that up because you asked me before, like, why did I write the book? And here's another reason that I wrote it. For people who are just feel intimidated by the whole industry and by the whole process of writing a book, because it's scary. I think it's scarier than, like, making the MBA or even harder than making the MBA to get a book published.
Because you don't want people to think you're stupid because you don't have a high vocab, you know. So what if I don't know the word? I don't know. You've got it in here kind of like sycophant. Whatever you even wrote. I'm like, what the heck is that? You know, ass kisser. I'm inclined to write ass kisser over whatever you said. But, you know, it's intimidating if you don't know that that word even exists.
And it's just intimidating because I, you know, people think like I didn't grow up to be a writer. Like I am, you know, I work at the Gap, or I don't write, and this is just not what I do. Or I'm a single mom, or I'm a single dad, or I'm a whatever the thing is that people classify themselves as things. But maybe they're a writer deep down, but they're just so intimidated by the whole process. And my whole thing is like all of Live Like a Fruit Fly and all of my new book is just like, look at me. I'm just a regular dude who just made sure that writing was the most important thing in the world and made sure it happened. Yes, I have talent, but the beginning of my book starts out with, like, was I really talented or was I really lucky? And I just said yes, because that's the only answer. You have to be talented, but you need to make your own luck and make things happen. So the point of all this, I guess the major point of all of this is that anyone can do this. Not like anyone can be, you know, a best-selling author, but if anyone who feels like they're a writer can make it happen, they just need to make sure that they connect with the reader, and they need to make sure that they don't lie to themselves about not having their best work out there. And then forget about all the little stuff on the outside. That'll take care of itself in some way. Did I ever think in a billion years that HCI would come and publish me? And HCI, they're the original publishers of Chicken Soup for the Soul. And I've been trying to get my book published for so long that one of my friends was just looking at my self-published book, and her new friend was the acquisitions editor for HCI. I said, oh, what is that? And then it all just came together.
Yeah, they turned me down.
You just never know.
Time, HCI was like, no. And more no, and more no, and more no. Thank you very much. Go someplace else with your book. They turned
That's
me down so many times. Yeah, and that is you can be... You have to live through it. Let's talk about rejection a little bit, because this isn't anything, a lot of things creative, not everything creative, but a lot of things creative have rejection with them. No, you're not the best home run or hitter on the team. No, we're not going to publish you. No, I don't like your movie. I don't like your song. I don't like your whatever. I don't like you. I don't know.
Right.
It's all over the place. There's rejection, isn't there?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of rejection, but instead of talking about rejection, let's look at others who make it, within quotes, because someone who has their book in the bookstore, it means that they've accomplished something phenomenal. But keep on going back to that bookstore, which I live in because I'm such a nerd, and you'll see the same book there. Not too many books are moving. Only the top, let's say, 100 books in the bookstore are moving. Everything else just sits there and they collect dust, just about everything. There's not really a big turnover, and trust me, I look constantly at everything in there. And that just shows you, like, screw the publishers if they're not going to publish me. I'll just put it out myself, and who cares if my book's not in Barnes & Noble? I now have the power through self-publishing to get my book out there, and then maybe from there Simon & Schuster will pick me up. Or maybe from there, who cares about the publishers, and I'll just be able to market it myself if I have a good product and make it happen.
Yeah.
And I'm blessed to be traditionally published, but I chose self-publishing for the second time around, even though my book's been out there for a while, just because, you know what, I'm going to have complete control over this one, because I'm sure a publisher's not going to want me to say the complete bullshit guide, and I'm just going to do it myself. And it levels the playing field that you know that you can just get a book out there, and just because you don't have your book out in a bookstore, it really doesn't mean that much. No, not
many people. My kids don't go into bookstores ever, and that's the next generation coming. They're on that iPad and on they're downloading ebooks and everything. The last thing that they do is pick up a book, unless it's something that is coming through the high school or middle school as a book required to be read. They don't go into the library. They're on the iPad. So
I mean,
is hard.
I don't want to overly, I don't know, overly not publishing, because it's, I am so grateful that I've been published, and I'm going to down the road get published again by traditional publishing houses. But there, you know, just for anyone who's intimidated by the process or doesn't want to deal with it, you can totally just do it on your own, and it's beautiful. And if you have words that'll connect with people, I really feel like it's your, it's kind of like your requirement to go out there and make it happen. To you've been blessed with this writing skill. Don't let anything hold you back. And if you feel like there's stuff that needs to get out there, just make it happen.
Well, and that was kind of my point right there, too, is that it's so easy. Well, not easy. That easy is overstating it for sure. But, you know, it's not terribly difficult to put out e-books and things like that, you know, and not even have a hard, you know, a hardcover or softcover product even. People love the self-publishing world and the publishing world the way it's changing, because they publish everything in ebook or in soft cover or whatever, and Amazon. You know, things are so freely available to order them. It's completely cool how you can kind of get anything over the Internet. And I'm not sure what that's doing to the actual stores themselves. But, you know, it's just sort of a lot has changed in this world. I'm not an authority on it by all means, but, you know.
And it'll keep on changing because, you know, there's still a stigma. Like, when I put out my book, like, when, you know, people would be like, oh, who's your publisher?
Yeah,
say, well,
there is.
You don't know anything about publishers, so don't even ask me.
I know. Everybody says it. Well, who's the publisher? Where's the book?
Oh, who's your
Where
publisher?
Can I get
like,
the book?
They're just
Where
trying
is it?
To... They're just trying to kind of posture with you. It's like such human nature to be that way with their ego. Like, and it kind of affected me at first, but then I just realized, like, hey, I'm a writer. You're not. I know what I'm doing. And
trust yourself.
You know, go live your life and everything's great. And maybe you want to buy my book. But you can't let that bother you. It's just because that will eventually change too. The more self-publishing becomes traditional publishing, people won't even care. It's art. And that's artists and people who appreciate art. And that's the only thing that's going to care about. And the couple of people who say the negative things, they're going to say negative things regardless.
Well, isn't one of the top books out right now, didn't it start out self-published, that 50 Shades of Grey? I'm pretty sure that started out as a self-published book. So, I mean, there's so many examples of things that are doing well in both industries, so, in both self-publishing and traditional. But I wanted to keep an eye on time. We have about 3 minutes. And for anybody listening live, we might cut off live, but the show will keep on taping because I want to make sure we finish up properly. Gabe, what are your websites, or what's your website?
I've got a couple of them. But the first thing to just, the only thing that's really important here is just go to Amazon, and my books are Live Like a Fruit Fly, and The Complete Bullshit Free and Totally Testing Writing Guide, which are a lot of words. But just look up my name, Gabe, G-A-B-E, Berman, B-E-R-M-A-N. And my book right now, the writing book, so I just want to make it so accessible, is just $2.99 on Kindle. So $2.99 for something that will give you the ultimate fire under the ass to really start writing from the gut. And, you know, another reason why I wrote this, just real simply, is that there are so many writing books out there, and none of them give you that inspiration to just go out there and write. Like, I dare anyone to get halfway through my book and not start writing. I dare anyone.
I dare you, too.
If they feel like they're being a writer. So it's $2.99 on Kindle. It's, I don't know, it's like $7 for the paperback. And obviously Live Like a Fruit Fly is like $10 or something too.
Okay.
So I have a blog out there. It's, you know, there's oh my god, OMG. Mine is Oh My Gabe. So it's omgabe.com. And I just post a whole lot of nonsense up there. You can find me on Facebook, on Twitter, just Gabe Berman. And I'm the most accessible person you can imagine.
Yeah, you're right there. It's really you. It is. It's really you. You're on Twitter. How are you doing on Twitter?
I'm doing my thing.
Awesome. All right. So good. Well, what an interesting conversation, and thank you for being with me today. That was fun.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
It's
like the fastest hour of my life.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's fun to swear, too.
It is.
I'm just kidding. All right. The book is called The Complete, I get to say it again, Bullshit Free and Totally Tested Writing Guide. Boy, I'm going to have money that goes in the swear jar in this house. How to Make Publishers, Agents, Editors, and Readers Fall in Love with Your Work. It's by Gabe Berman. And I'm just the biggest fan of Gabe. And the other book that he's written, again, is Live Like a Fruit Fly. They're both awesome. He has The Fruit Fly Strikes Back and then Omegabe. I love that.
And just because you don't have Kindle, you can get the Kindle application for free on your smartphone or tablet or anything. So don't worry about it.
All right. Awesome. Thank you, Gabe. Really wonderful to chat with you, and thank you everybody for listening. And
thanks so much.
Trying to think of what we got coming up here. On Sunday we have a food allergy show, a major food allergy show, 2-hour show. And then on Tuesday we have Nick Ortner from the Tapping Solution on. So keep following the Best Ever You show. Lots of love to everybody and have a beautiful day. Thank you, Gabe.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Best Ever You show. Want more? Visit us at besteveryou.com. Be your best and keep it real. Confident, successful, caring, and beautiful every day with Best Ever You.